shores of El Pacifico, Bill Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry Show, our number 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Last hour, you heard me just jump right out of my skin on matters not having to do with you or our guest or our callers or any of you fine people who listen to the show. It had to do with the technical has been so bad for so long that now it's starting to leak in order to get the it was a situation where I couldn't call or couldn't hear the guest. It was news for it. Unprofessional. And all of my life in this business, if there's one thing that I've prided myself on and one thing that that our show, there's a lot going on with this show. And if you go over to philhendryshow.com and you take a look at our website and you get a backstage pass, you'll know exactly what's going on with this show. Lots and lots and lots and lots of things. And in order for that, and if it's not there, then it's impossible. And the reason why much of what I'm saying now has come out on the air is because I have not gotten asking for it. And so it just comes someday. Let me tell you this. I guarantee you this. Someday, the entire story will come out of People Magazine, if they do. All right. Welcome back. This is our news and information hour with Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman. Sorry, guys. I had to stop down for that.
Yeah, it's all right.
Now, I know what you mean, man. Yeah, you know what I mean. I mean, I'm telling you, you don't ever want to have to deal with it. Our number 877-876-PHIL, although during our news and information hour, we rarely take phone calls, and the reason for that is simply we just don't have time, all right? There's too much to talk about, too much to comment on, too much to give some flavor to, not just to give you the story and the interpretation of the story, but, you know, Where's it all? Does it mean anything? Is it important? For instance, is it important to talk about Obama every day? Probably not. Is it important to talk about politics every day? No. Is it important to talk? Now, here's one that, as a lover of law and order, this is a story that has struck the city of Los Angeles and and San Francisco and hopefully a lot of other cities. And this is a disgraceful episode that occurred at Dodger Stadium, and I have been a Dodger fan my whole life, and when you're a Dodger fan here in Los Angeles, you don't like the San Francisco Giants. That's just the one goes with the other. Generation after generation of Dodger fan and generation of Giant fan, we've hated each other. Not literally, but we've hated each other's teams. And it goes all the way back to the days in New York when the Brooklyn Dodgers and the New York Giants didn't like each other. The fans didn't like each other. Fans didn't like each other's teams. And as far back as when I was a little kid, the first thing when I was a Dodger fan, as a little 10-year-old, I didn't like the San Francisco Giants. I mean, I knew Willie Mays was great, but, you know, every time I saw him come to the plate, there's Willie and Orlando Cepeda, Willie McCovey. I didn't like any of those guys. Bobby Bonds, Barry's dad. And as a young man, I went out to the pavilion in left field and got hammered on beer back when they were selling beer in the pavilion. And we wore our Dodger helmets and we screamed at the Giants taking batting practice, taking fielding practice. I mean, this was, you know. And this kind of tension between the fan bases is an acceptable and it's an attractive thing for two ball clubs that are in business to attract fans to a point. Please understand something. I'm not going to say, oh, it's the Dodgers' fault, it's the Giants' fault that people get so bugged with each other that they decide to beat each other half to death. I'm not going there, okay? Because I've been around a lot of Dodger Giant baseball games through the years, and I've never, ever, ever heard of anything like this happening, ever. And this man, a 42-year-old father of two from Santa Cruz, a paramedic, so in other words, someone who is a valuable member of society. You know, we've got a lot of garbage out there, there's no question. There are a lot of people out there that walk the streets that it wouldn't make any difference if they lived or if they died. It would probably do the whole world a service if they just dropped dead tomorrow. But this gentleman here, this man, Mr. Stowe, was not one of them, is not one of them. And I'm praying that as we read this story to you, he's still with us. Because he was beaten so badly, tonight we learned the doctors have had to relieve the pressure on his brain. This man is fighting for his survival, and the body is fighting infection. And, of course, one of the things that it does when it's fighting infection is it sends blood to the affected area. And when blood goes to your brain, the brain swells. And doctors know that they must relieve that pressure. And so that's what they've done with Mr. Stowe. Now, detectives in Los Angeles are looking into unconfirmed reports that the same suspects that struck other Giant fans minutes before the attack that left Brian Stowe in a coma, they also attacked other fans. These were a couple of drunken scum Dodger fans. They've got police portraits or a police sketch, I think, of two of them.
Yeah, they look like the two guys have like been in the 20s.
One guy's got a mustache. They look to be Hispanic. Am I right about that?
Well, you better not say that's going to profile them.
What? That's not profiling them, bud.
That ain't profiling them. They already know that that's what they look like.
Well,
that's not profiling. That's what they're not just saying, we're looking for Hispanics because that's probably who did that. They're not saying that. They're saying that they've got it. They've ID'd these guys.
Yeah, but still, if you say they're Hispanic.
You got to say they're, if that's what the guys are, that's what they are. That's who they're looking for. They don't know their names. They know their relative ages. They know what they look like. They know the car that they drove off in. They know that they were with a 10-year-old kid. So they, I guess, were two older brothers or two uncles. I don't know what the hell they were. But Mr. Stowe was headed to a taxi stand after the Dodgers' 2-1 victory over the Giants on March 31st when two shaven-headed young men in Dodger clothing began taunting and swearing at him and two other fans who were also wearing Giants gear. Stowe was punched in the back of the head. He fell down, bashing his head on the pavement, and was kicked before the attackers ran off. They fled in a 4-door sedan driven by a woman who had a boy with her. Composite sketches of the men have been released. The city council on Tuesday now have voted to offer a $50,000 reward for information leading to the arrests of these two pieces of garbage. And the Dodgers and the Giants have each kicked in. So the total is $100,000. $100,000. Money well spent. If there's anybody out there that knows where these individuals are, there's very, well, obviously they live in the L.A. area. There's a good description of the two of them. They've got a description of a tattoo, which is...
That's pretty big, man.
Because, yeah, tattoos are very distinctive.
Yeah, they nailed down a tattoo. That's pretty hard to get away from.
Unless the guy, what?
But you could have it removed. Well, you're not going to have it removed, man. I mean, you could, but...
Look around for a guy with a big... bandage on his arm, I guess. They estimate that out of some 40,000 people who streamed into the parking lot after the game, at least 100 people probably were near enough to see the attack, and Detective Jose Correa of the Los Angeles Police Department has urged people to contact the LAPD. It was too dark for video surveillance cameras to provide clear images. That's a... I guess that's something they're going to have to fix, huh?
Yeah, they're going to have video surveillance. They can't see it.
Well, it was in an area, it was a taxi stand. Now, there's no question in my mind, no question at all, that there was a verbal confrontation between these groups of fans. And I don't doubt that Mr. Stowe may have responded to whatever was being thrust his way, and that, in the minds of these two slobs, gave them carte blanche to do whatever it was that they wanted to do. I mean, fans are always jaw-jacking each other. I mean, that's just the nature of it. You're always giving each other a hard time. You're always giving each other crap. And, God, I've been at ball games, man, where I've sat next to guys wearing the opposite team's uniform. It's when people get so hammered, and some of these people cannot hold a drink to save their lives. They have a few beers, and all of a sudden they're just, I don't know, they think they're King Kong or something. And now they want to fight the world. And that's when the police got to get involved, and that's when, you know, some serious things can happen. And, of course, if it's just a group of drunks going at it, guy gets bloodied up, that's the end of that. The cops separate it. They take everybody up to wherever they got to go, up to the substation. But if it's out in a parking lot at night after the game, a dark parking lot, there's a man waiting for a cab, not looking for a fight, other than the fact that he's wearing his Giants uniform. He's wearing his Giants gear. And there ain't no law against that. Now, you know, we had the Raiders down here, and I'm going to say something that may piss some people off. I don't really care. We had the Raiders in Los Angeles, and I was a Raider fan in the 1970s, especially when they began to create the mythology of the Raider Nation, commitment to excellence. I remember them when, man. I'm not talking about the 80s Raiders or the 90s or this version of the Raiders. I'm talking about when they had George Atkinson and Jack Tatum and Kenny Stabler, and they had Marv Hubbard, and they had Phil Villapiano, and they had Big Gene Upshaw, and they had Art Shell, and they had Daryl LaMonica, Warren Wells. These were the bad boys. These were the Pirates. These were the Raiders. And they developed this kind of anti-San Francisco, anti-49er East Bay image. And it was fun, and it allowed their fans to swagger around a little bit and be a part of that whole Pirate thing. But when they came to Los Angeles, they began to do something that Lenny Bruce warned against years and years ago. He said, never believe your own press. Don't you ever believe all the good stuff that people are saying about you, because it's horse crap. Well, the Raiders did not take that advice. They began believing in the idea that they were kind of pirates, and they were kind of swaggering guys. And they, in other words, they weren't playing great football anymore so much as they were just pretending like they were playing great football. Take a look at the Raiders today. They stink. And their fans began to sniff this out, and they began to clone themselves in the image of the Raiders. And so they all became this sort of swaggering, very self-conscious and self-involved and self-aware bunch of fantasy land freaks with their Darth Vader masks and their stupid, silly, asinine Raider Nation mentality. So in other words, they began to look in the mirror and they saw that pirate. They didn't just go out and play football, and the fans didn't just come out and appreciate a good football game. Now they believed themselves to be bigger than a football game. They were like some tribe. And the result being, when they were here in Los Angeles, there were some horrific fights. There were terrible brawls. There were real scum going to the games. You didn't want to take your kids to the games. You didn't want to go down to the Coliseum anymore. I mean, I used to go to the Coliseum and watch the Rams. That's how old I am, when I was a kid. SC, UCLA, we saw it all down there. Coliseum was the track meets, the Times track, outdoor track meets, all that stuff. You didn't want to go down to the Coliseum anymore. It was a disgusting hole. You know. And this city of Los Angeles, which was at one time considered to be a respite from this kind of horrific behavior, you know, man, we got to rope this stuff in. And I tell you right now, I know a lot of people listen to me from around the country, but if anybody listens to me now in L.A., anywhere in L.A., and you know who these two pieces of crap are, you know, you'd do them a favor by turning them into the police. You'd do them a favor, because somebody's going to recognize them, and there won't be a cop around. There won't be a cop around. And that might not be good for them. All right, we'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Well, what do you say? You saying somebody's going to kill him and stuff?
I didn't say anything, did I?
Never mind, man.
I didn't say anything. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL, philhenryshow.com, of course. Dancing with the Stars. What happened to Kirstie Alley? She fell down, or her partner fell down, and suddenly, now people, the poor girl, they're saying she was too fat. We'll hear about that when we come back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Radio for Patriots, by Patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show. Radio for Patriots, by Patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show.
Is that right?
Climate change costing deer.
Climate change costing deer. Is that CNN you're looking at? What is that?
Place it's called Talk Planet.
Yeah. It's where you talk about the planet.
Oh, get out of here. You know, I said it before and I'll say it again because there's something rotten in Denmark, man.
No, this is like the Arctic Circle.
Oh, God, that's funny.
What?
It's a saying, something rotten in Denmark. Is that the Arctic Circle? Really?
Yeah.
Or is it just, does it just look like the Arctic Circle and it's Norway or something? It's those deer, man, that's got to be like Norway or some weird place like that. Not weird place, but I've said it before and I'll say it again. Are those deer, man? What the hell are those?
Yeah, those are like a different kind of deer, man, like a whitetail or something like that.
Well, in any event, the point that I'm making here is I really believe this. I think that in 10 years, there's going to be stories popping up about the great climate change hoax. And how that, yes, there was some information that was good, but not as bad as we thought it was. And you know where I get this? You know where I get this from? I get it from my knowledge of how media works and my knowledge of how very quickly people are influenced by media and then work to, put into practice certain beliefs that they have that have simply been reinforced by media, but the hard data sort of trails behind that. And where do I get that knowledge from? The Cold War. Hey, that's right. Any of us that grew up during the Cold War, and I did, we heard that the commies, oh, baby. Now, there's no question that the commies, that was nowhere that we wanted to be. We don't want any commie around here. Get out of here with commie. It's godless. It's crap. Take a look at them, man. They're standing around. The thing that hit home with me and probably most Americans and probably most people living in the world of the free world were the lines around the block to buy a loaf of bread. You know, who wants to live in that? Had nothing to do with the godless. And yeah, it was godless. And the idea that you couldn't worship religiously, I mean, that was just so foreign, especially being raised Catholic. How does that work? And nobody can vote. And they just seemed like what they were sold as, this faceless horde of Asiatics, Euro-Asiatics in the case of the Russians, with their big beetle brows and their cheap-ass-looking suits and their goofy-looking cars and their medals hanging there on their jackets. And in the way they talked, and they were all, hey, you know, drinking the vodka and slapping you on the back. You didn't know one day to the next, what the hell, who are these guys? And then movies like, you ought to see a movie that was very, very popular in the early 60s called The Russians Are Coming, The Russians Are Coming. And it was starring Alan Alda. No. What's the guy? Carl Reiner?
I don't know who that is.
Well, Carl Reiner, just never mind. Carl, you would know. He was in Ocean's 12.
Oh, yeah, that was the old man.
The old man in Ocean's 12, yeah. But he also was in the Dick Van Dyke Show. Anyway, Carl Reiner and his wife was Maureen O'Hara, I think. Anyway, this was a movie. Very well done, by the way, and hysterically funny. Jonathan Winters was in it. A lot of great comics were in it. Very funny. It was on the lines of It's a Mad, Mad, Mad World, except instead of them running for money, it was a small vacation town on Long Island, and the people are there for the summer, and they're enjoying their lives and, you know, having a ball. And meanwhile, a Russian submarine runs aground, and they didn't mean to. Oh, I know. Alan Arkin was the captain of the Russian submarine. And it's a big, tall, good-looking blonde actor. I don't know who he was. I think he's an American actor who played the love interest of the American chick. So that was, you know.
Oh, yeah, I see that, man. So they got like the Russian guy and an American girl.
Yeah, they had a little love thing, the Russian guy and the American girl. And the Russian submarine runs aground, and the story is of these poor Russian sailors trying to find a boat powerful enough to pull them off the sandbar so they can get the hell out of there. They made a mistake. They should never have been as close in, but they wanted to get a good look at America. And they're looking through the periscope, and they wanted to look at all the cars, and they wanted to see the country. They run aground, and the movie is about how these poor guys, these sailors, are looking for a boat to pull them off the sandbar, and how eventually the people in this village help them and realize they aren't such bad guys, and the U.S. Navy, meanwhile, gets word that they're there, and they're going to blow them out of the water. It's pretty interesting. But the Cold War was a period of time where we were told that there were a lot of capabilities on the other side that they didn't quite have. Well, I'm getting the same sense with this climate change baloney. All right, Kirstie Alley and this man, Shmurkovsky. We'll find out what happened to her or him, or is she that fat? We don't know. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. For Patriots, by Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Oh, Kirstie Alley and Maxim Shmurkovsky. Maxim Shmurkovsky. They fell on Dancing with the Stars. That is the story. That's the headline. And mean-spirited tweets blame the fall on Alley's weight. She may have leaned a little too much on Dancing with the Stars partner Maxim Shmurkovsky during their rumba on Monday night, leading to the painful tumble the pair took in the ballroom. Shmurkovsky, her professional partner on the show, whom the judges like to call the shirtless wonder, said that his thigh gave out and he experienced a Charlie horse during the routine. Before they performed, Ali said the dance was supposed to reflect a really difficult time in her life when she lost her mother in a car accident during the 1980s. Perhaps Ali saying it showed the agony and the ecstasy was live television's version of a self-fulfilling prophecy. The sweet dance set to Israel, forgive me, I can't even pronounce this man's name, and it looks like it's Hawaiian.
Yeah, no, it's Russian. Come on, I want to lay you.
What do you mean, come on, I want to lay you? That's Kamala,
Kamalulava.
But whatever, forgive me, sir, if you're still with us, I can't pronounce, it's called... Over the Rainbow is the song. Did he, Israel Kamalulu or something?
I guess so, yeah.
Anyway, it started off serenely dramatic until the thigh issue. Shmurkovsky struggled to get back, to get up and back on count after taking a few seconds to recover. It was sweet. He just looked at me and said, "Let's keep dancing," Ali told E. And I thought, I like that. I have the best partner. And we have some audio, and we also have video of this, and I can certainly play for you the audio. We are showing video of the dance here on Phil TV in HD, so we'll just roll this, and we'll take a look at this, first of all, and we'll also listen to some of the audio that we have, but they start off Dancing with the Stars, and this is, by the way, courtesy of ABC, the video that we're looking at. They start off dancing slowly. He's back, walking backwards and dragging her left leg, and then he tries to turn her around, and he falls. It's not a very embarrassing fall. Doesn't look like it anyway. He tried to make a turn, and you can see his thigh give out, and then he tries to turn her, and then they just fall on their rear ends. After leaning too much on her partner, Kirstie Alley takes a tumble. That's what apparently the judgment was. And Mr. Shmurkovsky explains what happened when asked by host Tom Bergeron.
You had a bit of a challenge there. You okay, Max? What happened?
My thigh just gave out. I'm so sorry.
Let's see. In the post-dance interview with co-host Brooke Burns, Shmurkovsky says Kirstie Alley wasn't to blame for the tumble.
My thigh just gave off. Any dancer would know it happens, muscle strains and all of that, but it has nothing to do with her. I just want to apologize.
And Kirstie, how hard is it to pick up the pieces after that and to get back up and finish your dance?
It wasn't hard. I just didn't know where to start. It's funny.
Right.
We've done it a million times.
But... Well, those kind of things happen. It's a live show, and you know what? You handled it.
Is
really
it a live show? That's great. Judge Len Goodman and Bruno Tognoli review the dance.
Well, dancing is a bit like life. It's about overcoming adversities. And, you know, you overcome it. You got up, you dusted yourself off, and you came back stronger. Well done.
All right, Bruno.
Oh, yes, Kirstie. You can't keep good talent down. Because I'm telling you, once you got up, it was better than ever.
Sure.
You don't think so?
They're being nice to them. Whatever. Poor Kirstie Alley. I mean, if she hadn't had that weight issue, and that's what everybody was tweeting about, that she was so fat that it busted his leg or it snapped his knee. You heard the guy. He says, it was me. And whether it was or not, that's what he says. So he's a gentleman. Okay. Anyway, better luck next time, guys. That was Dancing with the Stars, and we did play that clip. I hope you saw it. It didn't look all that dramatic at all, man. It just was him walking backwards, you know.
Yeah, it looked like it did. It happened what he said it happened, that he walked back, tried to turn her, and the thigh give out.
Yeah, it looked like the right thigh.
Yes, the right thigh. Thank you, boys. All right. In other news, a judge has barred the Confederate flag. A judge has ruled that the Confederate flag can be featured on a Florida license plate. The DMV will not comply yet. What does that mean? Well, a judge has said you can put the Confederate flag on Florida license plates. The Department of Motor Vehicles says that, they haven't said, but they will not comply as of yet. Now, Florida's Sons of Confederate Veterans Commander Douglas Dawson says he's elated with the judge's ruling on the group's effort to create a special license plate. A federal judge, John Antoon, ruled a section of state law limited the First Amendment rights of the Sons of Confederate Veterans when they applied for the specialty plate several years ago. Antoon said the law unlawfully gave the Florida legislature the ability to decline an application for a specialty license, blah, 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 blah. Now, I know that there are some people that think this is a Southern issue. It's got nothing to do with the North. Well, I've had these arguments with these people before, and I'm not going to... I recognize one overriding reality right now. When it comes to certain issues, and they're the most boring issues because they've been talked out and the logic has been applied and the lessons have been given, and I don't know. But there's certain issues that people will always be at loggerheads about, and it's going to take a lot of people dying. And what do I mean by that? I don't mean, violently. I mean it's going to take the passage of time, and the, quite frankly, the thick-headed people among us have got to die and go away. I may be one of them, I mean, I'm sure I'm one of them when it comes to certain issues. I'm one of those thick-headed guys that keeps things from happening. I'm one of those people that for some people is standing in the way of the thing that they really want, feel that they're entitled to, should have, and if it was these stupid idiots that stand in our way. Okay. Now, I believe in individual freedom, and I believe in an individual's ability to express himself. I know we also have a sticky wicket when it comes to certain symbols in this country. The Nazis, the Confederate flag. I know there's a lot of people who think that's very, very unfair to say. How could you dare? Why would you say something like that? It's a horrible thing. We're not the Nazis. I understand that. I know that, but certainly the descendants of the Confederates, you could not even close to say that they're Nazis. I would say that groups like this, the Sons of the Confederate Veterans, they believe in, they like, I, you know, I'm saying this with great respect, they like the romance of the times. They like the idea that there were people who believed so strongly in their, they were Americans that believed so strongly in something that they were willing to go to war for it. Okay, and I'll give you all of that. But, you can't talk to them about, like, for instance, okay, you're from the South? Yeah, you know that there's black people from the South, too. Well, now, there were black folks that they went into the Confederate Army, too. Well, if you looked into the history of that, you'll know that it was not a rush to enlist in the Confederate Army. In many cases, they were slaves that were promised freedom only if they enlisted in the Confederate Army. In many cases, these were slaves that followed their masters into service. There was no African slave in the South, or African-American slave in the South, that was eager to go to war and to continue fighting for his own enslavement. That just didn't happen. The Confederacy, toward the end of the war, did debate the legitimacy of slavery. That's what they did in their Confederate Congress. There were debates. There were very strenuous debates. Should we even continue this thing called slavery? Even if we win and we are able to establish the Confederate States of America as a legitimate country, do you think we really need to keep slavery? And that was not an easy call. And there were some vigorous debates about that. But the fact is that to some people who are the descendants of Southerners, and they happen to have black skin, and I don't know if that matters at all to other Southerners, who would be white Southerners, I guess. I don't know if that matters at all. But it just so happens that to most of those people, this Confederate flag is not a very attractive thing. They don't want to see it. They don't like it. And it represents something else. Now, they're Southerners. You know, they're not Northerners.
Well, what do you mean by Southerner, though?
They come from the South, man. What kind of question is that?
Well, I know, but I mean, are they really Southerners, or...
Well, if their families are from there...
Yeah, but they're originally Africa.
No, man, hey, they were born in America, man.
All right, hold, let me do this. Bud, everybody originally came from somewhere. These are black people whose families go back 500 years. They were born in this country, and another generation, another generation, another generation, another generation. They probably go back further than your family. If you want to look at the black Southerner, their families probably go back further than any white families in that area. If you really want to get into it. So to say that this is Southern culture, no, you're wrong. But I'm going to say the following thing.
Then he should not have it.
I'm not even going to say that. Because this debate has been going on for so long that this generation of Americans is going to solve it. People are going to have to die, and new people are going to have to be born, and smarter people are going to have to be born. I'm not saying that we're stupid, but on this issue, we're stupid. It's like we're stupid on a lot of issues that we can't seem to figure out. We're still fighting about that abortion thing. Holy God. And I mean, we are some real thick-headed clowns when it comes to that, when it comes to this. You know, there's a few issues here. The whole idea I swear to God, I mean, this notion of factionalism and political parties, you know, how many times do you want to hear people say, there's too much gridlock, before you realize they don't really mean it? So it's going to take another generation or two or three of Americans to be born, and all of the dumb genes have to get washed out, you know?
So you say, oh, who's dumb?
I think it's pretty stupid. As the man once said, you know, the definition of insanity is knowing something's wrong and doing it over again. I think it's pretty thick to say that you're tired of gridlock and you're tired of factionalism and you're tired of this nonpartisanship, but to keep engaging in it. I think that's just flat stupid. And I don't think anybody's going to be convinced otherwise. I don't think any people that are engaged in it are going to be convinced that it's wrong until they're dead and buried and a whole new generation of Americans are born who get it. Because this generation of Americans is not the generation of Americans that will do away with nonpartisan politics. This is not it. I mean, we're good at some things. I mean, and one of these nights we can have a debate or a discussion on what it is that this generation, when I say this generation, let's just call it the post-war, or if you will, you know, the whiz kid generation from the mid-1950s on, maybe 1960s on. We did not figure a lot of stuff out. As much as we like to kiss our own asses and talk about how wonderful we are, we have not figured out the big issues like that. We got to get back to figuring out how to raise kids. But I don't know, you know, when we'll get everything squared away. But there's some things we may know how to do. I don't know what they are. But one of them is not solve the abortion debate. One of them is not solve the whole bipartisanship thing. One of them is not figuring out the Confederate flag. I mean, those are the things. We can't get that done. You know.
What about world peace?
No, world peace ain't going to happen with us either. You know, there comes a time you just have to take a look in the mirror and say, this is the world that I'm a part of. Look at me. I'm part of this this 21st century, you know, this post-war coming of age in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Stepping lightly in the 21st century. What are we capable of doing, this generation of Americans? Well, it sure ain't this, and this, because it ain't going to happen. So forget it. All right, we'll be back on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Don't forget philhenryshow.com for a live streaming video of the show. Police use pepper spray on an 8-year-old kid. Did they go too far? Who cares? And we'll talk about that.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show. For patriots, by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
today. Police, this is a story of cops using pepper spray on an 8-year-old boy after a temper tantrum. I don't know, maybe the kid deserved it. Well, let's listen. When most kids throw a temper tantrum, they get a timeout. In 8-year-old Aiden's case, he got pepper sprayed. A Lakewood police report details the second grader's violent temper tantrum in a classroom. It happened on February 22nd. I heard this story already.
Yeah, it's an old story, but it's an update.
According to the report, Aiden was spitting at teachers. He also broke wood trim off the walls and was trying to stab teachers with it. The report goes on to say, and this is a report, by the way, from who? Police report, okay. The report goes on to say that Aiden was holding what looked like a sharpened one-foot stick, and he screamed, "Get away from me, you effers."
Sound like Linda Blair.
It does sound a little bit like Linda Blair. So, you know. Lakewood police officers ordered the 8-year-old... What do you mean, Linda Blair? You mean the kid in Exorcist?
Yeah.
That ain't Linda Blair.
Yeah, it was.
That's the actress that the kid was something else.
Oh, yeah, the kid's name was, like, Reagan.
Ronald Reagan.
It wasn't Ronald Reagan. It was Reagan something. Anyway, Lakewood police officers ordered the 8-year-old to drop the stick. When he refused, they sprayed him with pepper spray twice until he dropped the piece of wood and was handcuffed. Aiden's 4 feet tall and 82 pounds. So what? I wanted to make something sharp if they came out because I was so mad at them, Aiden said. I was going to try to whack them with it. According to the police report, that's what you do. Stick a mic or a pen and pencil in front of a kid and see if you're going to get a straight answer. You know, these cops can't win. Here's a little boy that is obviously having some serious sugar reaction, man. I don't know what.
Probably gave him a Milky Way.
Whoever fed this kid lunch. Now, if the cops grab this kid without pepper spraying him, they just, you know... somehow grab him, and that's, you know, no, you're right. It's not a hard thing to do. It's a very easy thing to do. In fact, it's so easy, with an 82, and this is what people don't seem to get, with an 82-pound, 4-foot-tall kid, it's so easy that the cops wouldn't have any problem, but the kid might get hurt. For instance, a kid that is really wiggling and squirming around wildly, There's no doubt in my mind. A kid like that could dislocate a shoulder. You could break a bone. You could sprain something. You could mess this kid up just by trying to grab a hold of a kid that is so out of control, he wants to take on cops. Now, what's going on in a kid's head that's 8 years of age and he wants to stab a cop? There's something real wrong. So you don't have to pepper spray him. You can grab him, but don't think for a minute that this child is going to be exhibiting normal behavior once he, you know, police officers got a hold of him. I wanted to make something sharp if they came out because I was so mad at them. According to the police report, the boy was later treated on the scene for a red, irritated face. You bet. Now, here comes the mother. Oh, now we're going to, here we go. This is great. Now, we're going to hear from mom about what a sweet little boy he is, what a fantastic, example of the human race this kid is. And those lousy cops. 8-year-old Aiden, here is the kid first, telling Channel 9 News why he broke wood trim. Well, we already heard him. So here is Lakewood Police spokesman Steve Davis defending the use of pepper spray because the out-of-control Aiden was scaring the teachers with this weapon.
They were so frightened of this 8-year-old child, the officers told him to drop it. He wouldn't. Our officers had to do something to defuse the situation in a hurry before someone got hurt. And I think the officers made a great choice that day in choosing the pepper spray.
All right, so I guess we don't hear from the mom, you know.
Well, you know, she's going to say the same thing like you said.
She'll probably, you know, talking about what a great kid he is. Anyway, according to the mother, Aiden's mother, whose last name 9 News has chosen not to disclose, she believes the Lakewood police officer should have handled the situation differently, of course. She says police were called on her son at school twice before, and both times the officers were able to talk to her son and calm him down. Is that right? So two times before, they've had cops out to the school. This is a serious problem. This is a serious problem that involves you, Mandy, and whoever the husband, the father of this child is. This is a problem that is not the cop's problem. This is your problem. 8 years old and they've had the cops on this kid three times? Here's what the mother says. She says, I'm sure what he was doing wasn't right, but he's 8 years old. He's not a normal 8-year-old kid. They've had to call the cops three times on him. You're sure what he was doing wasn't right? You better believe it. They walked in, asked him to drop the stick, and then pepper sprayed him with the spray. I think it's excessive. Excessive? Calling the cops three times is excessive. What the hell is this mother doing to figure this situation out with this kid? This kid's in a public school. He's supposed to be in school. That means we have to throw this problem on top of the teachers and all the other problems that they got. You know, I honest to God, it amazes me that some people don't get it about teachers. Lakewood Police Spokesman Steve Davis defended the officers. You just heard what he said. Well, we'll try to follow up in the future on this little this nice little boy, Aiden. Phil Hendry Show produced by Jason Rantz. Technical director is Rick Johnson, our associate producer, Dan Northcraft. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show, also available at philhendryshow.com.
Phil Hendry.